Cognitive Rampage Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam Lowry. I hope you're taking care of you. Hope your MLK weekend was a good one and you celebrated. You know, I make the joke every time MLK comes around where I say, you know, I'm sure that's what Martin Luther King wanted, was to make sure every child was not in school on his holiday. Right? You know that's what he was fighting for, right? Equality, so everyone gets to not go get education on a certain day to remember him by. I'm sure that's what he wanted. But I hope you had a good weekend. I hope everything's looking out for you. I was thrilled to have this guest on. My guest today is Daniel McNamara of Rising Lamb Productions, as well as his girlfriend and business owner of Social Tees, Samantha Brody. She also lives in New York, born and raised. I loved talking to her. She was awesome. She's was a blast to meet this weekend and hang out in Florida. So she's on the podcast too. She'll chime in once in a while, but that's who's coming in from the background. We're actually probably going to sit with her and talk about what she does in New York before she leaves here. She does, we mentioned on the podcast, but she rescues dogs and stuff, but, and way more than that too, but she's really, an awesome person, but she's on the podcast too. But, you know, the main focus of the podcast was, my friend Daniel, and, his films. He is also, well, let me start at the top. First, he's a movie producer, movie maker, director, et cetera, et cetera. He has one movie out called Red Tide. He has another movie that he just wrapped up filming, which is what we talked a lot about, which was the making of Literature to Larceny. And you can actually go to literaturetolarceny.com and check out what the movie's about. But anyway, he shot a feature film. This is a full-on feature film he shot in about 10 days, which I thought was wild. I couldn't imagine trying to push through something like that. But he did that, and we talked about that film. We talked about what his drive is. He's been in the movie business for years now, and he lives up in New York City, and he helps produce this podcast as well. He helps, you know, design the back end, basically produces the podcast, you know, helps deal with my ass, which is hard enough. But he's my best friend. He was the best man at my wedding as well. We go way back. We started our very first company together. We talk about Rendezvous Productions and a throwback, but we also, well, he does. He tells some pretty revealing stories about my life before. In my book that's coming out soon, I talk about, excuse me, a walkabout that I go on and to kind of change my life. I was just seeking something different, and so I just kind of left everything behind and took off. Everywhere from the Keys to a Native American reservation, I walked and took off. Well, some of those older stories about an older lifestyle of mine that I used to, you know, lead daily, which was not good or constructive at all, we drop a couple stories about that. So, yeah, I mean, it's my best friend, and we go back. So we reminisce on some things and talk about a lot of those stories. You know, we joke and laugh about some things, but it was really good for me. He doesn't know now, but watching, you know, my friend go off on his passion and talk about what he loves so much and the people that do what he does he loves so much was amazing for me to hear. You really, for those of you that, you know, may know Danny already, you know that side of him when it starts to come out, when he starts talking about movies and creation and, you know, living your life of freedom and following your passions. Because, you know, it's that's how him and I click. We're really on the same level of living our lives that way and, you know, living in a cognitive rampage. But it's, you know, it's good because him and I are working together. He's walking me through my first movie as we're recording. we've been filming for a day or so, Chemical Incarceration, which is my first documentary, and he is helping me produce it and direct it, etc. So I'm learning along the way. Like I said, that's why it was also exciting to talk to him because, like I said, this year is about gaining competence and learning things in different places and just getting information. And I mentioned it on the podcast, so I'll go ahead and say it now. If there's a topic or something that you want to learn about, right, that you want to know, like I said, let's learn together. So shoot me a message, an email or something, comment somewhere. on a person you think I should have on or try to get on, and maybe we can learn together. Because I want to learn. I want to get competent in everything that I can before I leave here. So, yeah, send that message in. If there's people or ideas or topics, send them to me, and let's get competent together again this year. But I do have to mention, for Danny's sake, Danny has, one, he's very, very ill. Him and his girlfriend, Samantha, both traveled down here and got sick. So I'm just glad they were, you know, trying to push through the podcast, which is why it wasn't 2 or 3 hours. It's only about an hour. They weren't feeling too well. But Danny also has a cyst he's dealing with in his throat. He's got a surgery lined up for February, but that's why his voice sounds a little off. So forgive him. He'll mention it too, but he would probably be mad if I didn't say anything. So there's your buffer. But either way, it was a blast talking to my new friend, Samantha Brody, and my long-term friend, Daniel McNamara. Jan was influential in my life, man. He was a cool, probably my, him and one other professor are right up there. Mm. Wonderful.
It's too bad I only had one of those.
Really?
I had one, Lisa Cook. She was, when I went to UCF for my, to go for my master's, she was one of the classes that I took, and she was very helpful. The class that she taught was like film production management, and that one class taught me everything I needed to know to make a movie. Basically, I took her advice, and then we had meetings because I wasn't enrolled in the master's program. I was just taking classes to get enrolled, but I realized how much of a joke it was as far as the master's film program.
Really?
Because all you do is you just learn business. So all you learn is like business management. And if you, I went to school for business management. So going back to school for my master's in film production was just like a refresher course from business school. So I went for like a year and took 2 classes with her, and that's all I needed. So she was kind of a mentor for a little bit, but I haven't spoken to her in a long time.
Yeah, I was, you know, when I did look back to, I was a little surprised myself about, you know, I didn't have as many, you know, professors that I thought would have, you know, touched me a little closer, you know, been some closer to, but, and I'm grateful the ones I have. One of them was on the podcast, actually, Professor and Dr. George Brooks, the tenure, the history, no, I always mess up, medieval specialist. Yeah, I mean, man, the beer brewer, the guy I told you about. Yeah. Remember? You wanted to talk to him about his beer and stuff, remember?
Yeah, but he only does it for fun.
For now.
Yeah.
For now. Yeah, I'm waiting on his new brew. You know, he makes some. I gotta tell you, I'm not a beer guy. You're a beer dude. You know what I mean? Like, you really are. You've taken me to drink those nasty things sometimes. And maybe I'm just not cool enough or eclectic enough, or maybe I need a different hat. But
All of the above.
Okay.
All of the above.
Well.
And a beer guy does not mean Bud Light, Budweiser, Natty Ice, Modelo, Corona, Miller Lite, whatever those stupid commercials are all the damn time.
It was the same thing Professor Brooks said. I think you may have rattled off the same list.
It's the actual real beers out there that are treated like wines and made right from small breweries all over the world.
But see, that's what I was surprised. See, when he brought up that medieval shit, I thought I was going to drink like the syrupy stuff, like the shit that you drink. And it wasn't. It was lighter. It tasted wonderful.
There's different kinds of beer, not just the shit that I drink and what he has.
My gosh. Are you a beer prude?
I am, and I'm proud of that. Because I never drank beer growing up. Why would I drink beer when all it is just drinking water? Growing up, when you were obviously 21, of course.
You didn't do much of anything till you met me, really.
I just drank.
Yeah, I pretty much ruined your life.
No, but I did. I tried acid in high school once. No, twice. One time I had a really bad trip, and I was in the corner of a room, and it was miserable. And the second time, I just had fun with it. It was just a bunch of kids who went to Ripley's Believe It or Not on iDrive. And I ended up getting lost, and I ran away from everyone. And everyone was looking for me, but I knew. And I was in the food line on iDrive, and I came out with 4 boxes of Gushers, and they were like, "Where did you go?" And all I did was look at them, and I just started running, and I ran back to Ripley's, believe it or not, and I ate my Gushers, all of them. And that's the last thing I remember from that trip, but it was a good time.
God bless Gushers. Gushers, the acid food. You think they'll sponsor the podcast?
I hope so. Can you send me free boxes of Gushers, please?
Yeah. So find Daniel McNamara. What's your Twitter handle?
I don't know. Daniel Lewis 82?
No one ever knows their Twitter handle. See, is that's not good, is it, Samantha? It's not a thing anymore.
I mean, I don't know. I don't use it. I hate it.
Really?
I hate it too.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
About how I hate Twitter.
Why? Why is Twitter not a thing anymore?
I don't know. I mean, I think it is in certain circles or in certain industries, but I don't like the format. I find it really hard to follow.
Oh, okay.
And it's been useless to me for my organization, so.
I agree, too. I mean, I don't use it at all. I mean, I use it just to try to reach out to a few people, but it has failed me miserably. Maybe just I'm not persistent enough to do that way. But I prefer just Instagram or Facebook. So Daniel McNamara on Facebook or Howie Mac at Instagram.
And send the man some Gushers, apparently.
Gushers. Or fruit snacks. Strawberry, please.
Yeah.
I have stories about that, too.
We got a lot of stories, man. It depends on where you want to take the story. I mean, look, I'm just grateful you finally did the podcast with me, man. I mean, shit, how long we've known each other? Well, that's where I met you, was college. That's where you started talking. You know what you were to me, man? I tell this story a lot, and I'm going to tell this fucking story on the podcast, too. Because you were the guy across from me in e-marketing that was the typical college guy. You were the guy. Like, obviously the women liked you. They all sat close to you. And
He's lying.
No, I'm not. And and I was trying to change my ways. I was set in some old ways. Let's just say I drove a 79 two-door bubble-back Caprice. All right, we'll just stop there.
He's a Florida hood boy.
Slow down.
It is what it is.
No, I don't believe that. It is what you make it.
But what you made was a hood Florida boy. But that's what your mama made.
But I also grew up hunting and fishing at the same time.
Florida boy.
That's right, yeah, right. We're a rare breed, man. Definitely odd.
Odd is an understatement.
And anyway, I'm trying to, I don't know, maybe it was a couple close threats with prison, but I was trying not to do that anymore. And I thought, you know, I got to get some new friends. Like, my friends are rather scary. And so I was like, that's a typical dude. And then I ran into the typical dude downtown.
In Antigua. And then I saw who you were because I knew you were in my class. But at first, I didn't know. And then I'm like, oh, this is the dude from my class.
Mm.
And I was probably drunk. And I'm like, oh, and then I'm like, oh, what's up? Because to me, seeing you in class was like, who is this hood motherfucker walking into class with a tank top on, with his pants all big, coming in like he owns a place, with his little G-string beard he got going on? Like, I'm like, oh shit, Eminem has entered the building. But there was still a realness about him early on, even when he approached me, that it didn't really scare me, because I'm the type of person that I accept people for who they are and who. Like, you have to earn trust. It's not something you just get right off the bat. So you have to learn about the person. You can't just prejudge them. So I would never do that, although that stuff goes through my mind sometimes, because I'm like, oh, hey, and I could be very prejudiced, but I like to do it in a joking way. I tell people, like, I can't be racist because I'm Irish, Italian, and Puerto Rican. Because I make fun of people, and I like people making fun of me. Call me a spick. Call me whatever you want. I don't care. It doesn't hurt my feelings. I know there's different variations of that, but I like to treat people for who they are deep down inside, not for who they look to be on the outside. So,
and you did, because I definitely was looking the part of the time, man. Holy shit. God, that's what I said.
I'm going to leak some pictures.
No. I think I put some pictures. Actually, there's an old, back when I was selling dope pretty hard, there's a picture, a very big contrast to where I was walking at the Jacksonville Stadium as a football recruit, and then in a full velour jumpsuit with the rose-colored glasses, a beanie, and a cigarette in my mouth. And it's like a double, you're like, who the fuck, what the hell happened here, man? Yeah, man, and yeah, that was kind of the beginning of me trying to, you know, break out of that, you know?
Yeah, not only that, you're a very open person, but you're also very honest, a little too fast. So even if it wasn't someone like me, the stories you told me in the first few months of knowing you would have had any other person run the other fucking way.
My bad. I'm sorry. But
again, you were telling me that you're trying to change, and that's, you know, you weren't that person. You don't want to be that person, which you weren't.
You know,
we kind of went down not the greatest path, but we tried to go do the right thing for a while, and eventually found our feet.
Rendezvous Productions, baby.
Rendezvous Returns.
Hey, toast to Rendezvous Productions. Agreed. Yeah. Mm. We did. Hey, Roy, if you're out there, brother, I got that $250 for you, man. I really do.
It's an investment.
It was. It was an investment. Not a loan. It wasn't a loan. We made that clear on the signature.
Someone probably still has that contract. I bet you it's him.
Roy, definitely. Hey, if you're out there, Roy, hit me up. I'll get you the $250, bro. I'm sorry, man. Hey, shit got wild.
No, I think you owe me the $250. I paid him all of it.
Not at all.
Well, I'm going to find out. I'm going to actually reach out to Roy.
No,
he's very active on Facebook.
I don't give a shit. Oh, fuck. Yeah, that story, that hits me. I mean, we had too many. The Keys trip with the Beamer bar?
The Beamer bar, yep.
The Keys trip was interesting, my friend.
Yes, that was fun.
The drive back from the Keys with no license plate.
We made it the whole way. So, we got to tell the story. So, we went down to the Keys.
Tell someone.
Was it my birthday? It was around my birthday. And so, I think we both, at least I had a suspended license at the time, but I had a better car. And I probably shouldn't be telling the story, but we can get into the Florida driving system, which is all bullshit. It's here to make money, and that's the only reason Florida actually makes money, besides that and prescription pills.
Oh, it's a racket.
And retirement communities, of course. But we were going down to the Keys for a little vacation, just me and Adam, and my license was suspended, but I had an older Beamer that didn't have a high mileage on it, so it got us down there nice.
The dark blue one.
The dark blue one.
I remember that bitch.
And we got down there. We were having a great time. We stayed in a little cottage off the river. We had a good time. It was one of those weekends where it wasn't busy. It wasn't spring break, so it was just the locals, and it was fun. We had a great time. We would put a bar in the trunk of our car, and we would drive down to Main Street, and we would just go refill our drinks and then go back to the bar and have fun. And then we'd also drink there, but every once in a while, we'd go back to the Beamer bar. So that's what I call the Beamer bar. But after the trip ended, which is crazy, and this changed my view towards law enforcement in Florida. We were driving back, and it was I think 1 or 2 in the morning we decided to leave, so we're driving back through Miami, and I was driving, and somehow it took us down a detour off the highway, and we end up in, what area of Miami were we?
Dude, we were Homestead, homie.
Homestead, Miami.
Yeah, buddy.
This is one of like the most dangerous areas of Miami, and it's me and this guy. And apparently there's a lot of construction going on, and I'm pretty sure I either ran a yellow light or the red light, and I was stuck in between, but I ended up getting pulled over. And the cop ends up coming to the window, and it's me and him, and I'm freaking out because my license is suspended. I think my insurance was up, and I'm like literally about to just shit my pants. And I'm like, this is it for me. Like, I'm never going to drive again. And then Adam's like, just let me do the talking.
Imagine that.
He's like, just let me do the talking.
Let me do the talking.
Because he loves to talk. So the cops come over. I literally don't say anything because I am just freaking the fuck out. Like, I could have a heart attack, and I'm only, what, 24, 25?
Yeah. No.
Maybe like young. 25,
24. It was definitely after the Vegas incident with myself. So, yeah, we were 24.
And so the cops just come over. And there's like 3 or 4 cop cars that come by, and I'm like, oh, fuck, man, I'm going to jail. And Adam gets out, and he's talking to the cops, and they got my license, and they have all this stuff. And they come back over, and they give me like 6 different tickets, one for everything, not having a license or expired license, not having insurance, tag, all that stuff. It was just like, I'm still never going to drive again with all these tickets. And they're like, well, you can't drive, so your friend can have to drive. So Adam took over the cars.
Now, do you remember what really happened? What he told us we could and couldn't do?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
And as we're switching seats, he tells us to take... And he told us, he took the license plate? Didn't he take the license plate?
Yeah, he took the license plate, and he goes, as far as I know, that car cannot leave here.
Yes. He took the license plate, and he goes, as far as I know, this car cannot leave this spot. Now, we're going to be right across the street, so just make sure you don't take off. If we have a call or something like that, and we come back and we don't see a car there, that also may not be the worst thing.
Yeah.
So he's basically telling us that this is a terrible area. If you leave your car here.
Now, remember what was happening in the parking lot.
There was some kind of.
Just in the drive, right through the drive through, right across from us.
There was a dark Dodge blacked out.
There it is.
It was like a cop car.
Well, there was like a group. Yeah. Thing going on. A club had just let out or something.
Some kind of deal going down, it looked like. But these cops, and there was like five of them.
Well, they let us go, and we took off walking. Remember, we had to get away from the vehicle.
Yeah.
So we take off walking. Remember, we walk across the street. We walk down the other street. And whatever that incident that was happening over there with that club that had just let out late night, you know, with some chosen choice people. And we were walking down the street away from the car. And then remember that black car came behind us, kind of stalked us for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was like, we got to turn the fuck around, man. The car cut us off this way. We turned around. That car came back this way. We got back. And then that's when we got back to the BMW.
But then as soon as we got back, the cops are gone. Adam took the keys and we drove without a license plate from Miami to Orlando. What did we take? We took the turnpike all the way up driving like the speed limit with like just praying we don't get pulled over. And I remember one cop car passed us and we didn't get pulled over, but we made it back and that was...
To the Beamer bar.
Hey, the best thing about that is I took that to court and they all got wiped away.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah, that was... That was
one to the system.
That was an interesting night, man. We had too many. One of my favorite stories, though, where we weren't doing anything bad was when we planned our first company. When we planned Rendezvous Productions and Howie in the Hills for 3 days.
I told her about that story.
That was fun. Besides the Hot Pocket.
That's when I told her about what you did, too.
What part?
Oh, are your lips numb? Yeah, this guy calls himself a therapist.
Hey, man, I do not hide away from how fucked up it was, man. I mean, look, wait till the book comes out. The book says enough about what I did. So, I mean, I kept it short, honestly. You know, honestly, Cognitive Rampage isn't a lot about me, really. It covers a lot, but, dude, man, I mean, we've been through some shit, man. I mean, from Planet Rendezvous Productions to doing those events to, I mean, man, we've seen some stuff. And all the way up till now... Where you're now an official filmmaker. Well, I mean, you were because you were parts on Hands and Red Tide years ago. And
The Sacred.
And The Sacred. And now you have...
Literature to Larceny.
Yeah.
Also, let me apologize for my voice. I have a 3-day Florida fever that I've contracted. And I have a cyst in my throat. So we're going to have a podcast version 2 after my surgery.
Yeah, your surgery is what, February 3rd?
11th.
February 11th?
Yes.
Dude, man.
So I'm going to sound either like a little girl or like Marlon Brando. I'm hoping Marlon Brando.
Yeah. Oh. So February 11th, man. So we started attempting to shoot today for chemical incarceration for your first documentary and my first documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and also Cultivated. It's kind of going to go hand in hand.
Yeah. And the other documentary. I mean, and you're just coming off of what, a 10, 12-day shoot for Literature to Larceny?
It was like 8 straight days, but 9 days overall, like 8 full days.
Wow, man. A full-length feature film and 8 days shot.
Yep.
That's fucking wild, man.
We still have like maybe 2 more days left. One day of pickups in New York, and then we have maybe a day or two of a Florida shoot, which we have to make up. So I can't say too much about it right now.
Yeah. Well, the website's up, though, right?
Yeah, you can check it out. It's literaturetolarceny.com. It has a brief synopsis and logline on there, and I'll be putting up some pictures, some stills when I get them as to what's to come.
Yeah. Now, you told me a little bit about the story. I mean, can you say anything about the story or no?
Yeah, really. It's just like an up and coming drama of a young boy named Roman Piller who, you know, had a rough childhood, but he was always smart enough to look past that. And just how he kind of grows up in New York and what he's trying to do and accomplish, which is basically just following his passion, which is writing. So, I mean, that makes... kind of sense if it's Literature to Larceny. So, and the rest you can kind of piece together based off the website.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I gotta say that's kind of similar to you, Doug. I mean, running off to New York to follow your dream to make movies, and that's what you're doing.
That's true. I mean, I never wanted to move to Florida in the first place.
You didn't write the script, right?
No, I had a hand in it. We had a hand in the story, but me and the writer, we partnered up. One of my many odd, crappy jobs.
Yeah. Well, who wrote? I know you had a hand in it.
Yeah,
but...
Raheem Mills, and he's at RaheemMills.com or NapoleonOpus.com, and he's a genius, man. I met him at one of my odd jobs after college. We actually sat right next to each other. I was producing a movie called Red Tide at the time while working this full time job, and he was actually a music artist. He was a lyricist. He had an album which is really good, which you can get off of iTunes. It came out in 2006, but it's It's a great album still to this day. But yeah, so we created a story. Once I told him I was a producer, he was excited and he always wanted to write a screenplay. So we came up with a couple concepts, which we still have some more that we're going to be writing in the future. And he decided once, you know, life happens and I had to go to a different job and he did his own thing. We came back together after about a year and a half away and he's like, yo, I finished the script. And so I'm like, awesome, send it to me. And so we've been working together for like probably 4 years now on putting this together. And, you know, it's gone through a lot of different changes from the locations. And it was originally like Orlando to California. And now it's morphed into what it is now, which is 90% shot in New York City, because it's going to be like a really dark, like New York City, New York noir type film. Really gritty, but very positive. So,
any actors in it that people know? I know you were talking to me. You're really excited about your main character that you had playing.
Yeah, the guy Nick Cregan, he's an up and comer. You know, we got him. Luckily, we got really lucky because the lead character and the female character in the film are actually boyfriend and girlfriend.
No kidding.
So kind of the relationship is shown is really real, and the film is just shot really real. It's all done really independently. But we had a great director, Mustafa Mahdi. He's based out of Atlanta, and he was just amazing to work with. He worked with the actors so well. We had a lot of new actors, up-and-coming actors, as well as some seasoned actors in New York that really helped out. They guided everyone along.
Anybody in particular?
Tim Rirucca has been in New York for a long time, about 4 years working. We have Ronnie Graham. He's another great actor. He's also from Orlando, too. He has a great story. I want to maybe connect you to, and he can tell his story, but why he decided to become an actor, because he got into an accident off of I-4, and it kind of changed his life. And so now he's killing it. And his scene was phenomenal. It was the opening scene, and it was so powerful. I mean, you can just tell his talent level is off the charts. And you know, it's sad because you know there's so much talent out there that, you know, I think Jada Pinkett Smith just put out a video, I don't know if you saw it, about the Oscars and how they're like, they continue to not, what do you call it, acknowledge black performers. And I guess she's mad because Will Smith didn't get acknowledgement for the movie Concussion.
Right.
Good I don't film. Know, maybe Concussion sucked. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that good, you know? But there's a lot of people out there that won't get acknowledgement because they're not at that elite level. So these actors that are working every day in New York, and they're working on commercials, and they're working on independents, and they're working on shorts, and they're working hard, and they're working other jobs too, you know? Like, they're talent. There's talent out there. It's just believing in that talent and finding that talent that's tough. But the director we had, he was working with everyone, and everything came together. It was like a family for 8 days, and that's how I wanted it, because when you have unity, that's when you get the best work out of everybody. So,
yeah, you would call me intermittently at a random time, and you're like, yeah, I got a break. Yeah, how's life? Yeah, the Giants are playing. It's good. I'm all right, got to go. And all right, see ya. All right, and for those like 8-10 days, man, I was kind of like a random phone call at any time or text would come from you, man. But I couldn't help it, dude. I was so fucking proud, dude, because I know how hard and long, you know, you had really been developing that and how much you believed in Raheem and what he was doing. You had talked about him a lot with me, which is strange that him and I had never met over all these years, you know, us being friends. And, you know, those 8-10 days when you were grinding and doing your thing, man, I don't know, man. You're my boy.
It was a good time. It was fun. It was great, like a great experience working with everyone. And like I said, the team of people that came together just did a phenomenal job, and they no complaints the whole time. So I mean,
a feature film in 10 days is quite a feat, man. I don't know what's the stretch of a feature film done in.
It could be done in, depending on the length. It depends on the length of the film, but I mean, you'll see. You know, there'll be films that are shot in up to 2 days, depending on the content. I mean, if the film is shot in real time and it's done 2 hours. You know, you think it's going to be shot in 2 hours, but depending on how it's done, like you have those huge movies that are, you know, epic movies that are like 6 months of shooting, 9 months, maybe even over a year of shooting with post-production. So it's just crazy. And at a small scale, I enjoy it. You know, I think it's fun to just to go out there and use the city and use the landscape and choose all real locations rather than putting these big, you know, big sets behind you that somehow don't look good. And CGI, you know, I love CGI and I appreciate CGI depending on what you're doing, what you're watching. But a lot of times just actual makeup artists, let them do their job. Like they do a better job. I don't know if you remember this as a kid, that movie Leprechaun.
Yeah.
One of the scariest movies of all time. All those movies back in the day when they just used makeup and masks, those movies scare me more than the movies of today with, like, these fake Godzillas and these, like, animated things. Because it's just, there's certain parts where you can't make look real. It's amazing what they can do, but at the end of the day, like...
The Child's Play got me, man.
Oh, man. The movie It clowns to this day because of that.
That is pretty... You know, my daughter's read that book multiple times. My wife's a huge Stephen King fan. And, I want to know so much, you know, because we really haven't been able to sit down and talk at length, really, about, you know, what that film experience was like, what that drive is. You covered some of it there, you know, about filming with the landscape, you know, becoming part of it. And it's really cool, man, to sit across from you and watch you talk about your passion like that, you know, and go off. And you mentioned a lot of these artists that are grinding every day, you know, for the love of it. And pushing through it. You know, Tony on the last podcast talked about musicians that were coming through the band or coming through his studio seemed to be missing the love for it and more or less were chasing the likes, the comments, the viral, you know, the stardom. And it seems, you know, when you're talking for you, it's really coming out of a direct, you know, love for what you're doing, you know, and what you're really creating and what you want to reveal, you know.
I've always been passionate about movies. Like, I remember as a little kid, you know, my parents wouldn't let me watch rated R movies, so I'd be in my room, and I would sneak out. I think I remember watching...
You always used to fucking make me sneak into movies with you, dude.
Oh, we used to... I mean, that makes it sound terrible to the industry. I apologize ahead of time. But,
We were broke, like, little kids at the time.
Well, when I was in high school, and in my high school, there's nothing really to do in Florida, obviously.
Unless you hunt and fish like me.
Unless you hunt and fish, or, I don't know. Want to sell prescription drugs, maybe? I don't know.
Actually, not, man. Yeah, you need a white...
I would sneak into movies all the time because we would see like 2-3 movies at a time. So sometimes we pay for one and go see 2 more. Or sometimes we all would just... We had like a system going on at the Oviedo Mall movie theater. The doors would be open. So we would sneak in the doors, just walk right to the movie theater. And we would do that like 4 days a week and see all the movies. And so I just had a passion for it at a young age. I know it's a terrible way to say it, but to this day, I don't pirate movies. I always buy them or rent them off iTunes because I know people in the industry to this day that work on reality and docs and all this stuff like that that still pirate stuff. I'm like, you're getting paid so much money on what you do, and you don't respect the industry that you're in because they still download stuff, which really bothers me when they start to steal movies. It's just a terrible thing. Like, why would you do that when you make... You know, I've known personally some members of crew that work for the union that just make so much money and they can't afford to rent... Rent a $3.99 iTunes or buy the movie for $12 if they like it. It's pretty funny to me. But yeah, so just from a young age, I just always loved movies. And I really never knew where to apply that knowledge because I never wanted to be an actor. And as a kid, you know, I come from a middle ground family, you know, middle income family, where both my parents worked. My dad was retired before I was born. He was an NYPD cop. And, my mother was just, she was a housewife, but she's a worker. She worked 2-3 jobs, and she loved working, but she did a good job raising me.
I love your mom, dude. I love her. Yeah, she's so awesome. I miss her.
Sweet. Yeah, she's sweet. I can't wait to see her again tomorrow. She feels terrible that I'm sick. But
she was always taking care of me. You said that when I used to pass out in the guest bedroom that she said I would sleep like I was in a coffin. Like I would cross my hands over my chest with my feet straight down beside me. And she goes, I'd wake you up in the morning. I'd just have to make sure you were alive. You were sleeping like you were in a coffin. And she would too, man.
That's funny. So, yeah, like, you know, and I don't know where I was going with that. But just to get into the love of film, I just always knew that. I didn't know what I wanted to do with it because I didn't want to be an actor. But as parents growing up, they're like, the only thing... They didn't know much about the industry, so they weren't like, oh, you should go be a producer or a director or this and this. I'm like, I don't know why that is. I just know the movie I'm watching is cool. And that's all I really cared about. I didn't know there was this secret life behind the screen where there was a business between every movie.
That's what I was going to ask you. What was the draw-in?
The draw-in was that each movie I do is its own business. And however I'm a part of the business, either I get hired on or if it's my own script, my own idea, it's my own business. And it's a temporary business that's either successful or not. And most people can't take a rejection like that. I am 33 years old, as you know, have failed many times in life. Rejection isn't that big of a deal for me. So
just keep fucking pushing anyway.
This one isn't, you know, the best ever. I'm hoping the next one will be. You know, hold fast. That's the
I love that you got that tattoo, man. I love that stuff, dude. When you text me that, you said, you're really going to get hold fast? Because I said if I sell the...
You told me this idea. You told me the idea first. Because I always said you stole my Tree of Life tattoo idea. And then so I'm like, I'm going to steal your next tattoo idea. And you're like, I'm going to get hold fast. I'm like, nope, I'm getting hold fast. And I already got hold fast. I'm like that next week.
This is the kind of...
You're like, when are you going to get this tattoo? You keep bringing it up. And I just came back and said, I got the tattoo. And you're like, what?
Yeah, that speaks to the kind of friend you got when he gets a tattoo just to spite your ass. Like, that is a hard-headed motherfucker.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was a good move.
He burned me with a pan that was just made bacon. He put it, after it was just sizzling, he put it up against the back of my arm.
He walked by. All, like, fucked up like.
All fucked up like. They burned me.
So I just set it right on his tricep.
Logic makes no sense.
Well, no, what he's not telling you, and I'm not telling you, you know when you light a lighter, right? And it gets really hot? Yeah. What he would like to do is when he would have the lighter really hot, is he would then touch you with it. And then when he'd touch you with it, you'd have these oddly shaped smiley faces burnt into your skin everywhere. And so...
I plead the fifth.
So that's what he would do. And so one time, he was having a go at it that day, as they would say in England. Poking at me with the lighter all day. So I'm doing the eggs, and he walks by, and I went, you know what? Bam! And I just put that whole pan right the fuck on his tricep. Just psst. That shit was like 3 inches long across.
You're lucky I had no scar.
Yeah. Did it go away finally?
I think so.
You were so pissed for years. I was like, bitch, you will remember me.
You branded him.
I did. I tried to. That's right. Yeah, I don't ever overreact.
Never. Are you just getting in trouble on Twitter or Facebook right now?
No, we don't need to be bringing up social media issues that I have with people. No, I don't. I just...
Where's the love, Adam?
No, I have... No, it's love and positive, seriously, man. It really is. It is. You know it, Samantha. You've been hanging out with me all day, right? It's love and positive, isn't it?
It is.
That's what we call surface. Love and positive. That's what we call surface, Adam. Oh, okay. You don't know what's beneath the surface. What's that iceberg statistic?
Man. Hey, look. It's in the book, man. I'm glad you keep saying it because it's in the book, man. I've left all that. I left. Yeah, that's years ago, man. You know that. Jeez.
Yeah, I thought you were under the bus, too.
No, it's in the book, though. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes we go through makes us, right? So we don't want to look back and be regretful. I mean, how much of that, you know, grind that you put through actually plays into your daily drive to push forward with, you know, the next film or the next hurdle?
Right. Well, it's like, you know, and you knew at that age, too, whatever those jobs were. I mean, you can't handle authority or structure unless you're controlling it. But that's what a lot of people are like. It's not just you. You know, just a lot of people handle it different ways. Other people handle it different ways.
Sure.
But who you were was not someone that could go work, just even when you were going to school, work part-time at a job while you're going to school, just for, like, a discount somewhere. Because, you know, you're getting your master's. I mean, what was that place you worked? You don't have to name it. It was some fishing store. And, you know, you just did it for fun, so you were fine, but you were just doing it to keep your mind busy. Yeah. And,
I was still trying to do, brother? I was trying to be fucking normal.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to, like, clock in. You know what I mean? But I was like, what's that like?
But it sucks.
Oh, it fucking...
It's terrible.
It almost killed me.
Oh, it almost kills... It actually kills everyone, and no one realizes it.
Phew.
And that is the worst part. That's one of the... Besides prescription drugs, it's probably the second worst things about America, is that... You're taught from a very young age to, you know, do what's right. Listen to your parents. Go to school. Go to high school. Go to college. Meet the person you're going to be with. Find a job. Get married. Have kids. And work that job until you retire and then live happily ever after.
Feed the process.
How many times have you heard, growing up in the 90s, I guess, I was never taught, you know, you should be your own business or create something. Like those rich people tell their Harvard students, you know. We don't want to hire students. We want to create entrepreneurs here. Like, you know, I went to UCF, which is a really good business school. I'll give them a lot of credit for the 4 years I was there. They taught me a lot. I took a lot of entrepreneurship classes there, and I learned plenty. And I've worked for a lot of different companies, every one of which I could probably run better, I feel, and I could have at that time. And I know a lot of it is, yeah, he's young. He's in his 20s. He's arrogant, which, yeah, some of it's true. But they don't value their employees as much. And that's,
you know, I'm interrupting. Who... You need the arrogance, I'm sorry, to make a feature film in 10 days.
What do you mean?
I mean, you know, you referenced it as arrogance, right?
Well, there's a difference between cockiness and confidence. So there's a fine line between that. So, like, you know, you kind of have to stick between that. There's arrogance and there's just being confident in what you're doing. And if you cross that line, I don't really like those people. And I'm sure you don't either. Those are the people that come off as like, oh, you're too good for everyone. And you meet those people. Those are the people that, I'm sorry to say, most of the time, go to Harvard, go to Yale, go to these pretentious schools that grew up having a lot of money because they look down upon people that are middle class and that have worked their way up. It's a totally different environment. And, you know, they can get along together, but it takes a lot of, pushing and pulling both ways because, you know, you have to have a certain type of personality and not everyone is meant to like everyone. So, you know, that's why it's...
And let's face it, the movie business is a money business. And absolutely. Now, if you want to make films, trust me, right, there's tons of broke-ass documentary makers on the grind out there, like... you know, name a million, right, that are building any kind of documentaries, right? Like,
there's YouTube channels all the time. There's everything out there.
So. You talked about them in the beginning. All of these artists out there that are really doing it for the love, for what they're...
actors, I mean, even crew members, even people just getting in the business, doing sound, doing audio, doing camera work, doing directing. Like, it's a popular business, and it's popular in New York, and it's sad. I've been down here a few days, and how little this community has grown in the film world. I can't even rent equipment. Like, it took me, like, an hour on the phones this weekend not finding anyone. It was really unnerving. Whereas in New York, you can just get it on the drop of a dime. You can get anything you want. You can rent whatever you want, whenever you want. So, you know, I was expecting the film community to grow in Orlando. So, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to bring up is that I feel like it hasn't really changed much, you know, since I left. You know, it's sad to say, I thought Orlando would be different by now. And I don't know how you feel about it because you moved away for a long time. Yeah. You know, you were basing in Paradise. So it's a lot different because you looked at it from... You missed Orlando in a way because you were in a smaller city than you were. But what do you feel about, how do you think, has it changed or?
No, and you know, that's where people that are here would tell you it's changed a lot. Yeah, buildings move, roads improve, new ones pop up. A lot of the same ones get repainted, but from a culture standpoint, you know, there's little pockets, you know, that try to emerge for a while. And then eventually, you know, the lack of support, you know, the lack of money, the lack of investment, they die out quick.
Yeah.
You know, so those, the good parties to go to, the cultural, you know, art, you know, reflects, there's tiny little pockets. But for the most part, it's the same. It's stagnant here.
I heard they built a performing arts center. Is that what Mike's in? A performing arts center?
Yeah, over in Dr. Phillips.
That's nice.
Yeah, Joe Rogan actually just performed there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he was at the Bob Carr downtown. Never mind.
Okay.
For some reason, maybe
that's what it was. He said something. It was downtown. Mike was talking about downtown.
Yeah.
But I just like driving through, showing her around. Like, one, you know, this is just one thing that's got to be said, is that Orlando is a lot bigger than most people think.
Yeah.
So just, you know, driving Samantha around, showing her the town. She's been here a lot of times for business. And when you come out here for business, they send you to two places. Either iDrive for a convention center, or they send you to Disney, which are all pretty much close to each other. Downtown Orlando is like 20 to 30 minutes away from Disney, and it has a much better feel than most people would want to know, but they don't know about it because Disney kind of blocks it out. So,
well, we talked about it. I mean, you and I actually went at that. If people actually looked up probably Adam Lowry Orlando Weekly.
Yeah, or maybe MySpace is out there. I mean, we did promote.
Well, I remember they interviewed me. They interviewed me, and I was mad because when people used to Google my name, it would come up, and the first line they wrote in the Orlando Weekly was, "Adam Lowry's of the opinion downtown sucks." They literally, when they called me for the interview, they quoted me, and I was like, "Oh, it blows." I mean, we were throwing events down there. We threw events all over the place.
I drove by, and I'm like, "That place is still there. It just got bigger. That place is still there." It's the same owners and on the same clubs, and it's sad because they could probably grow more if they were to extend the hours in Orlando, which they don't do. Which that's what's the biggest thing that's been holding this city down for as long as it has.
Disney will not let Orlando not be a family-oriented tourist town. I mean, that's what brings the money here. And so, I mean, they tried, right, when they built the new arena down there. They were supposed to, you know, there have been a couple new concerts and stuff coming through, you know. But before, remember, and back in our day when we were working in Orlando streets, if you will, to get a big artist to come here was very costly because it technically wasn't on the route many times.
It was out of the way.
Yeah, it was out of the way.
But do you remember, like, back in the real day, like, when we were, like, 13, 14, Do you remember going down to Church Street and like how cool it was and how it used to have the arcade on the top floor?
Yeah, the Penny, like, the Penny
that
Arcade.
That was historic. And all those buildings inside, the shops that they had, what happened to that?
Lou Pearlman.
That is insane.
Remember Lou Pearlman? Remember Lou Pearlman bought that and bought it all up. Here's a fucking story I never told anybody. I shit you not, dude. It seems weird. Remember Lou Pearlman was on the run technically?
Yeah.
Remember all that shit happened? That TGI Fridays.
Lou Pearlman is the guy who created NSYNC and all those O-Town, all those bands back in the day, if anyone is referencing that.
Yeah. And he embezzled a bunch of shit. And so I'm at the TGI Fridays at the bar by the airport. I know what the dude looked like. How many times was he at a club or a bar or something? I mean, you knew Lou Pearlman.
Right.
And so I'm at the Fridays bar. I come around just to have a drink, and I sit down. This fucker's on the run, and he's sitting next to me. And I'm like, what are the chances? And so I act like I don't know him. So I'm ordering food because, frankly, I'm doing some things I shouldn't be doing either. So I don't need any attention either. And, frankly, I shouldn't be sitting next to him. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to have the drink. And no, I act like, and I start talking to him. He goes, yeah, I'm in real estate. I know all the shit he's in, you know. And I'm listening to him talk, and I know this motherfucker's on the run, like, right now. And sure enough, remember, he flew out of the country. Remember? And they ended up bringing him back. Jesus, how the fuck did we get on Lou Pearlman?
I met him, and he was always nice to me. I mean, it was never a business relationship, so that's where he was the shark. But everyone knew who he was, and he was always talked about, not in a good way. So, I mean, that's what Orlando's known for too, which is
Well, yeah, that's how we got there. Because you think of boy band, Disney, family oriented, right? And downtown Church Street was the shit. I do remember being little. It was all lit up.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
it still could be. They trashed it. Once they put Bliss in, we trashed it. Basically, once they put Bliss in,
I like how you say once they. Well, we trashed it.
Yeah, I mean, we were involved in all those. Like, it's funny that Crest is still there, but there's a few places that are gone. It's sad. I mean, that place, and then I put that whole big center up, you know, which is nice with the movie theater, but
yeah. Well, you don't remember what they were supposed to do when they built that brand new arena and they extracted all the dollars from everybody in the city? Remember, what they did was promise development all the way down. What they end up doing was developing Church Street, developing the tower on this end, built the new arena, built West 55, and then just, well, forgot about the rest of the shit they promised they were going to develop, and the money just, well, went away. It was, remember, and the guy was in trouble for the big stratosphere thing that he built?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it had a lot of opportunity, but remember, you and I then, all the way back to the magazine that I was quoted in, is in that article, we were trying to keep downtown open. Remember, we did a July 4th rally signing petitions to keep Orlando open,
yeah,
is what we were calling it. And that's what I referenced in the article. And I referenced Disney, that they'll never let the bar stay open. We said, look, 2 extra hours of revenue from 2 to 4 can do wonders for the bar owners down here. And if you go to 6, you can bring in bigger acts, bigger entertainment.
You know what would happen if this was a liberal state? Mm. Disney would have its own hours of operation.
Yeah.
But why can't they? Because they're getting paid how much money by all these old heads?
Dude, Disney operates the state, my friend.
It's sad.
Dude, when you can make the Everglades change direction, like, and when you can, not direction, location, when you move swamp and change flow like that, I mean, come on, you're changing everything. You're affecting the environment. But look, Disney they won't let Orlando become that New York. They stressed it, that we are a family city, we're family oriented. And what ended up happening is it just spreads out. You remember, you'd have, now Disney's done something new.
Why wouldn't Disney have its own city? It could be called Disney.
They do. Celebration.
They should just call their city Disney and let it be that.
No,
and
it is.
Orlando is Orlando.
Celebration's got their own hospital, their own schools, their own high school now. I mean, Celebration is Pleasantville.
Yeah, it is. They used to have that. It would snow. They had fake snow every Christmas.
Yeah.
I would always drive down there to look at the Christmas lights because no one in Florida puts Christmas lights up on because it doesn't feel like Christmas every single year. Fake Christmas trees. Florida is the worst, guys. Don't ever move here. If you live here, leave.
You keep saying that. And then we talked about that. Was that the interview we were shooting today? Was it the interview for the film thing when I said I got to get out of this prison state?
Yeah, prison state.
Yeah. I don't remember where I got that term.
Oh, I forgot. Well, some comedian, I don't know who it was, but he made a comment saying, like, it's like a trap. Florida gets the tourists as they come in, and they'll pull you over for, like, for whatever ticket you get, or they're trying to always get you for a DUI, of course, while you're paying $12 a drink for drinks. And of course, you got a rental car and you're on vacation. So, you know, what to take a couple drinks because it's legal. And you don't think you're over the legal limit. So, you know, you're going to take a couple drinks from this nice bar you were told to go to and drive home. Oh, then you get pulled over by a cop and he pulls you over and he thinks that you're drunk. And you blow and you're like 0.1 over the legal limit. So you get a DUI. Now you go home and you have to go back to Florida and handle all this stuff. Florida is making about $10,000 alone, at least. Probably the medium, I would say. Most people probably spend more because they get good lawyers and it gets them off.
Yeah.
But people that don't have money get fucked. Yeah. And hence is why poor people get shat on and rich people can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah.
And Florida runs off that.
Yeah, a lot of the right-wing states do that. You know, depending on where you are in the state, if you're in the southeast, you can find some more Democratic side. But a lot of it's going to be right-wing. I hate party affiliation, technically. So, I mean, fuck.
I hate voting.
I mean, back to your 3-hour, or your 10-day feature film thing. I mean, mm-hmm. the drive to do that. I mean, to continue to push through that, right? I mean, what possesses somebody, one, to say we're going to do this in 10 days?
So, yeah, just, I mean, passion for what you want to do. I mean, you know, like I said, everyone has high hopes and dreams in the business, but I just want to tell real stories. I want to tell dramatic stories that, you know, can reach people's souls. You know, I'll hit, you know, every emotional level you can. You know, have a little bit of humor, a little bit of sadness, a little bit of everything, a little bit of action, like, but all real movies. Like I said, I'm not a fan of, like, CGI type stuff. I mean, maybe one day I wouldn't mind it, but I do love the fact that you can work directly with these actors and get emotional performances out of them, and you can keep it really real, because you can learn a lot of things from movies, even dramas, even features, you know? You don't just have to learn stuff from documentaries, you know? Like, a few of my favorite films, you can draw important qualities from, like, you know, Good Will Hunting, Finding Forrester, you know, these are all amazing films. I mean, just look at the film that Quentin Tarantino's put out, although they're violence. But if you just look at the progression of his films and where he came from and read his story, he's a genius. And he's grown over the years. He keeps getting better and better. It's amazing what you can learn. But yeah, so just telling real stories and putting it out there, because you can really help people. It's like educating the masses, and that's kind of, what? You know, it's an expensive way to do it, but it's really a low cost because you can reach so many people. So it's really worth the value. That's why, you know, when I ask people who are actually in the business that work on crew a lot, that do whatever, either sound or camera work, I'm like, and they have a lot of money saved up. What would you do with that money? They want to invest in real estate and this and that, and they would not put any money of it into a film. And I'm like, really? You get paid all this money. You have, like, you know, 4 or 5 apartments from this, and, you know, you have all these riches, you have all these things, and you just rather buy real estate just to secure your future, but you have no passion towards anything else, and not even what you're working in. So, you know, they're making money, they're making a good living, and they're good at what they do, and that's fine for some people. But for me, I would like to put all my money back into something that could reach other people, and I want people to learn from my experiences as well as their experiences, because, you know, that's how you learn. You learn from other people before you. That's why history is important. That's why, you know, learning where you came from, and, you know, that's why we know, you know, okay, don't be like Hitler anymore, okay? He was a bad person, you know? AKA, so is Donald Trump. So please don't vote for him because he's just a crazy joke that America has.
Well, the whole politics game itself is a joke, man.
It's true. It's a circus. You know, there's a reality show, and they're calling it The Circus. So it's a government-sponsored reality show, and they're calling it The Circus. The government is making a play on themselves and calling them the circus. I don't know. Like, I swear, if Donald Trump becomes president, I'm moving outside the country, because we deserve to get blown up. Like, it's ridiculous that so many people can support him, that can support Scientology, that can support these crazy religions that are just ridiculous. It's just amazing when all people have to do is just sit back and just breathe. And just believe in themselves and focus on what you want to do with your life. Don't worry about anything else. Why does everything else matter? Like, you know, I know it's a terrible thing to say when it's like, you know, every vote counts. So if you want to vote, you know, go vote, you know, be that person, contribute, because we're going to have a president. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But don't worry about all that. Don't stress out about that. People on Facebook all the time are stressing out about politics and this and that. It's like a joke to me. It's like, you're spending how many hours a day debating this, like, god damn, it's like just tiring just seeing it.
Yeah, people, there's a lot to it, even though they know the corruption exists in it, you know, and that it is a circus and that it takes your shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that honestly, your vote doesn't really count. Hell, I did a whole issue on it. Remember, I was doing the segments last year? I mean, help, you produce fucking podcast. So, I mean, you know, I did the the corruption episode under the issues. You can find that on YouTube and stuff. But
hey, guys, I also help produce the podcast.
Yeah, that's the thing we left out too, man. You also produced the podcast as well,
and now being promoted his book, which is coming out in February.
Yeah, right? I think you should interview me. I think talk to me about the book, because look, I got an issue talking about the book unless I'm talking to somebody like that needs it. You know,
about the book like maybe tomorrow.
Well, yeah, no, the films are too much, man. I mean, we're starting it. This is, I mean, I've never made a film before, you know, so when I brought my story, Chemical Incarceration, you know, to you of what I was telling on Rogan, et cetera, was, look, I'm falling in love with the process, you know, as we're developing, as we're doing it, the writing part of it, the creation of the back and outline, I'm kind of liking. I mean, obviously I kind of wrote an outline of this and you're guiding me through that, you know, which is part of what this journey of the podcast was about this year was, you know, dropping some of the negativity, dropping some of this political talk. Because last year, look, I was heavy in conspiracy theory. You know, I was out there.
Oh, yeah, you were.
And that was, it's because, look, I was waking up to this like, hey, you guys got to see this shit. And that's what we're doing with this film. Is trying to wake people up to that idea, you know, of what is really existing. And so it's, I don't know, for me, man, whether it's nostalgia or, I don't know, it's to work with you again on something has been something I've wanted to do for a long, long time.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and so to be back
We went off and did our own businesses for a while, and we came back around. And like you said, the first company we titled was called Rendezvous Productions, and now, you know, Rendezvous returns.
It does. Rendezvous does return, man. And
it's ironic because, you know, your mom drove a gold Rendezvous Buick, I think it was.
Yep.
And that's kind of where the name kind of pulled from. And I was driving one of those last week, and I took a picture and called him in it because I'm like, "This is, I can't believe I'm driving the same color, probably the same year."
That was the car, man. I walked out front. You were thinking of names, and I turned around and looked back, and I'm like, "Rendezvous." And remember when the Brazilian told me, when they were telling us that night, what the word actually really meant was more like orgy. And so it was Orgy Productions in Brazilian Portuguese, kind of in a reference off the cuff slang.
This is for Brazilian Portuguese people.
I know, but I thought, man, geez, really? Because we were doing the Thursday nights on the rooftop.
We did Thursday nights at rooftops. Yeah, we were pulling on, you know, doing some nightly promotions and weekly, monthly things.
So that's where we started.
That's where we started. Then we morphed into more of a, you know, mature audience. We tried to cultivate more of a Orlando art scene, which is still pretty weak as far as I saw. The City Arts Center looked like it's no longer there.
See, the artists are here and exist, but where they can sustain and be heard is not. You know, they can find little cubby holes, coffee shops, these kind of things, right? But they don't sustain an income. They can't make money. You know, there's no exposure there, right? There's no real giant community where they're doing things together, you know?
Right, it's true. I mean, there are some places. Like, I know a lot of people that are successful artists. What was the artist that we used for the first?
The cover, the photographer.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a badass. We got to look him up again. Sutton?
Eric Sutton.
Eric Sutton. He's a beast.
Eric Sutton Photography, I think .com is probably still.
Is it?
Probably still. He was amazing. He let us use the rights. We found a picture of him. I don't know where we found the picture.
You brought it up. You brought his photography. It was the chick sitting backwards in the chair with the Marilyn Monroe hair.
Yeah.
That was our very first. I still have that flyer.
Yeah.
I saved every one of our flyers, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so he let us uses artwork on these flyers, and it's just so different. It was so different than what people were doing, because people were, to this day, the typical nightclub flyer is just like just a disgusting slutty girl on the cover.
That's what it was at the time, man.
And just like just a clear background with all this information on it. And it's like,
you remember the radio ads? All you, this Tuesday night down at the, this is all you heard was, come drink really fucking cheap with a bunch of cheap ass fucking,
come kill your liver.
Yeah, it was terrible, man. And but you know those artistic events that we were trying to throw, you know, the City Arts Factory, like Moments of Zen, some of those stuff.
That was
we had
a great one.
Yeah, and some of those, they were good. We had these good ideas, you know, Red Shoe parties, the 6-inch party, the Classic Hollywood party, the Return to Classic Hollywood. You know, a lot of them. I think I remember a couple people telling me all the time, they'd walk up and go, look, these events don't belong in Orlando, man. Like, you should be in some back alley in New York somewhere doing this shit.
And that's where I typically see stuff like this. Like, to this day, I'll have people, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And it's always like, we're going to a masquerade party, or we're going to some, and it's some exclusive event where, like, if you go with them, it's like, it's one of the best experiences of your life. And it's true. And it's like, you don't, like, it can be cliche in other cities and small places. So, too much of a new thing or good thing is kind of goes to waste. And they still to this day still play on that. I still have friends with people that still run the businesses and follow them. And, you know, they're still, it's the same type of advertisements. Nothing really changes, you know.
Well, because remember, they're pulling off that tourist town. iDrive has really developed a lot. They put, you know, they put in the big Ferris. Hey, Roxy. Roxy's been on the podcast a lot, man. Shit, at least it's not Howie's bark, boy. Howie was barking on that interview today, man. Just, whoo, whoo.
His chimp lip.
That was over. Well, I mean, you know, we got some filming done today. We got some filming done today. And somewhat. And so we're still trying to work on some more. But for me, man, it's like I said, it's been a dream to work with you on something. I'm glad you could also finally talk about Literature to Larceny. I'm looking forward to seeing that movie. But working on this for the first day and these next couple of days has been quite an adventure with you, man. Learning the film world and you teaching me how to do it. Like I was saying, this year of 2016 with the Rampage, I've been telling people, like, come and get competent with me, right? Because in my book, I talk about competence leads to confidence, which leads to enthusiasm.
That's true.
And finding that state of enthusiasm is actually where the happiness lies, you know? And so for me, this year, what I'm trying to do is chase that competence transparently through the podcast with people. I'm even may start requesting, you know, what do you guys want to know about? You know, hey, but you know what? Fuck it. If you're out there, you want to learn about something, send a guest I should have on to me or something you want to learn about. And maybe I can get the guest on and we'll learn together because, you know, I'm on that mission. Hold on. So I'm talking about 16. So for me, man, doing this with you, bro, I've tried to give you compliments like two or three fucking times and you've interrupted my ass. And I'm finishing the compliment. And so to take
have to put up with.
Yeah. So to take these days, man. Look, I got proof, bro. I just played an answering machine message and you stole my tattoo.
Then you should answer your phone.
Yeah, I should. No. I won't. But look, it's been fun. I look forward to the next 2 days filming with you, man, and learning, you know, what's about, like the path, and then, you know, you'll come back on maybe before you leave, or maybe Samantha, you would come on cuz what you do in New York is awesome and so wonderful. And a lot of people love you. A lot of doggies love you.
Socialtees.org?
Socialtees.nyc.
Socialtees.nyc.org. She, I call her Super Sammy because she saves dogs and cats' lives every single day.
Well, you were helping me out a lot because, you know, our social media development over here at the Cognitive Rampage, you know, needs help. We only all can wear so many hats and, you know, you were great telling me about what you do. And obviously you're posting pictures of dogs and all, you know, you said Social Tees. Is that where you're?
Social Tees is the name of the animal rescue. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sick too.
Yeah.
Both you guys got caught.
I know.
Yeah.
See, this is what I'm talking about. I just got a text from Ronnie Graham, one of the actors I was giving a shout-out to. And he asked me if I was available to attend in Tribeca, the screening of his film called Curse of War, which is a short film. And I saw a clip from it. It's basically why I hired him to play the role. And I believe he plays a victim of PTSD. And it's powerful. And he just invited me to the screening.
What's the name of it?
Curse of War.
Where are they screening it?
Screening it in Tribeca, the 28th.
The 28th.
Yeah, but I think it's a closed thing. You have to be invited only.
Yeah, that's cool of him to do so, man. But we were talking about puppies. I think people want to know about puppies.
I know people do want to know about puppies. Puppies are kind of the most important thing in the world. And if everyone just had a puppy, everyone would be nice. You know what?
Let's entertain that. What if everyone at least once in their life ate mushrooms and had to have a puppy?
I think if most people had to have a puppy, fewer people would have children. my colleagues and I talk about that all the time because, well, we always say that you should foster a dog before adopting because so many people either buy dogs or adopt dogs without knowing what they're getting themselves into. So if you foster first, which is basically like kind of a trial period where you're helping the shelter out, but you also get to sort of try things out, you would learn a lot more about what works for your lifestyle before you make the full-on commitment of adoption. And then we always joke about having kids because a dog is such a huge commitment. Most people don't realize that and go into having children without knowing what it's like to take care of another life. So I actually do firmly believe that if you had to have a dog, even just fostering, before you make a decision about having kids, you might think about it a little bit more seriously.
So will you do a podcast before you go back to New York?
Sure.
Because you know what? I want to...
Also, we have to change it. If we have time, absolutely. We have to change, though. In your life, you have to do mushrooms, smoke weed, and foster...
Foster a dog.
Foster a dog.
I promote senior
animals. No, you know what I'm going to say? After you...
I would say puppies are hard. Well, yeah, no, puppies
are harder, but people don't rescue seniors enough.
So it's the scene. You know what? Let's get into that when you come. I want to learn more about the adoption agency.
You share so much information.
Oh, we're going to get deep. Yeah, all right. So you'll come back on definitely and talk about that?
It's up to Danny. He's the boss.
No, he's not. He knows that.
He knows that, too.
You know what? This guy told me today at the volleyball place. I was just making light conversation, right? Because I said, look, yeah, this is my wife. Good to meet you. Yeah, she's smarter than me, obviously. And I said, but does it make us smarter as men that we marry someone smarter than us? And we know that. Technically, does that make us smarter? Or do we listen? And then technically, no, they're always smarter. And so what you've done is by saying you allow him to think he's the boss, which is the thing that really goes along, which actually makes you much, much smarter.
Sometimes he's the boss. We take turns. That's what makes the relationship work. So far.
Plus, it helps when you're just sick the entire time.
Right.
Because we've been sick this entire vacation. We've been in Florida for almost 6 days now, and...
You poor too, man. I'm sorry. Wait, look, rather than run at length, man, for one, I'm just glad you came on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Well, probably in the opening of the intro, I'll tell the little story of...
Thank you for having us.
Wasn't it? You're such a douchebag. Can I leave a message on your answer machine that says, Danny's a douchebag? Hold on. You want to play one more message?
No.
Yes.
You want to play one more?
She's been wanting to record me because my voice is going to change for so long, so now she's just surprised, super excited.
Oh, trust me. When you hear it, dude, you're going to be like, damn, I was fucked up.
But yeah, no, I do really appreciate coming on here, and I've been an advocate for this podcast for a long time, and God, this guy can talk, so this is what I tell him. Because if he doesn't talk in his podcast, and I have to fucking listen to him, and it's better the podcast than me, because frankly, I'm fucking tired.
That's fucked up, man. You know, let's see how fucked up. Hold on, ready? Let's see how mean you are on this message.
Baby Rampage, I am God.
Oh my God. You left a message and said, I am God.
Look, okay.
Wow.
These messages were all for fun. It depends on what time they may have been. You know, after 2 a.m. when nothing good goes on at that time. Some of them may be in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when nothing good goes on at that time.
I'm interested. I want to hear more. Don't you, Samantha?
I do, actually.
Okay, 4-second one. This ought to be good.
And the thought to say, I am God, meaning that everyone should believe in themselves, is what I was referring to in that sense. Not really.
Early bird gets the worm. Come on, motherfucker.
What? Hold on.
Early bird gets the worm. Cuckoo, motherfucker.
What is wrong with you, man? Hold on. It keeps going.
Yo, what up, Cubs?
These are the messages, people, that I wake up to on the constantly from my manager. He's my best friend, my manager, really, my production guy. But listen.
Yeah.
This is what I wake up to. Oh, brother. I got him from years ago. I got them from years ago, man. This is going to be a masterpiece.
Stuff on there.
Yes. There's going to be a masterpiece that comes out, man. No, but seriously, dude. Thank you again for, like, you know, wanting to do the film with me and jumping on with
me. Yeah, I'm excited. It's important.
It's fun, man. And learning and doing a podcast, too, man. That was cool. You know, I wanted to ask you, and I was like, I'm going to force you. Because you were always like, no, I'm never doing it. And you finally sat down. So I appreciate you.
I just want to give you a hard time.
When don't you give me a fucking hard time?
That's the point.
Right. Remember, see people. So when I'm always talking on the podcast, don't keep yes men around. Trust me. I live that life. I have an asshole that steals my tattoos, burns me with lighters, and wakes me up every morning reminding me he is God and I am Tubby, 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 Tubby.
Yeah.
And he was actually the best man at my wedding. God, am I self-defeating. No, man, but for real, man. I appreciate it. We're going to film. We filming tomorrow?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometime. At some point.
And Samantha, we're going to do a podcast before you go.
Sure, if Danny says it's okay.
You're so funny, man. And I love you both, really. I do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tubby.
Sideways, schemes of a snake celebrating like it's Friday. Hot like a highway, desert at noon. I'm coming up, Lord, I'm coming up soon. I wanna hear my name, throw a party in the room. Party with the kings and the princes. Are you convinced that it's royal? Do I have a census? No senses, ever needed in the senses. The breath of your majesty, every word I meant this. Sent this to the heart, straight to the core. Core chamber, corridor, do you want more? Elevate ya, I'ma take you to the top floor. Vision of a sky view, have you ever been there? Like Puerto Rican flags in the rear view, I'm in there. The secret's out, y'all, indeed. Got his own star, succeed, love that music. Step free, let go, it's bliss. The secret's out, y'all, indeed. I got his own star, succeed, love that music. Step free, let go, it's bliss. The grandstand, the one-man band, single-handedly, I came up with a plan to expand my horizons. I rose from the sand with the hands of an artisan, putting in the work. Built in the palace, gotta give you what you're worth. A true phenomenon, yeah, the gift and the curse. So special, from your head to your feet. Just so fresh, so clean, so neat. But I guess it depends on the day, man. It's okay, man.